A new report from the Prison Policy Initiative finds California is one of more than 40 states that have no public data on the rates of booster shots that are being made available to the incarcerated. KPFA News spoke with Wanda Beltram, spokesperson for the Prison Policy Initiative, about their new report.
What we've been looking at and what we did a 50-state survey on was whether states are publishing information that's publicly available about who's able to get booster shots in prisons. So not just incarcerated people, but also about staff. And very disturbingly, we found that there's over 40 states, like you said, that aren't sharing anything with the public. So it's possible that people inside are getting booster shots or have access to them. And it's possible that staff have access to them, but there's really no information in most of these states. And California is one of those. It's very upsetting because, you know, we have state lawmakers and the Biden administration telling folks right now, go out and get your booster shot, right? Be responsible. And yet for people who are in prison facilities and jails, which are and always have been hotbeds of COVID-19 spread because of their density, people are potentially not able to get boosted. You know, that means that especially as we head into this winter with the Omicron variant being pretty dangerous for folks that have pre-existing conditions, although less, you know, much less serious, it sounds like, than previous variants, you're going to see cases shoot up in facilities all across the country. I live in New York City, where the Department of Corrections Commissioner for the city recently sounded the alarm and said, courts, prosecutors, you need to get people out of Rikers Island and other jails in the area because we're about to see COVID cases explode. On Rikers Island, there's only 38% of people who are incarcerated that have gotten fully vaccinated. So, you know, we need to understand that there are these heightened risks behind bars, and the fact that prisons and jails are not providing booster shots to incarcerated people really just illustrates that, you know, the people that are in charge of these systems are not really interested in protecting people's lives.
And what about vaccination rates?
That's a great question. Well, what we know from, you know, existing data dashboards is that vaccination rates in certain states are much higher than others. For example, we know that in California, the vaccination rate among incarcerated people is almost 80%, which is really good. There are other states where the vaccination rate is much lower. You know, for instance, the last time we got data from, Louisiana, the vaccination rate in prisons was a little less than 60%. Something that I'd like to stress is that the data availability is really patchy, right? California has made a data dashboard available to the public so the public can see how many folks in prison have gotten fully vaccinated. But they, you know, again, you know, there's these holes in the data when it comes to, you know, asking about booster shots. We don't know how many people have gotten boosted. I also want to just zoom out for a second, right? Because boosters are important, vaccinations are important, but I want to draw attention to the fact that there are still so many people incarcerated, because we know that the best way to reduce the spread of COVID-19 in prisons and jails and the best way to reduce cases and deaths in those facilities is to reduce populations in those facilities. And, you know, there's really no state that has done enough to do that over the course of the pandemic. You have, you know, for instance, in California, we know that the prison system population has gone down by about 18% since the beginning of the pandemic. That is good, but there's really no evidence that more people have been released during the pandemic than in previous years. So, you know, I think we should be asking, why is that, right? People, you know, our lawmakers, our policymakers can see that, you know, new waves of COVID-19 are coming. They understand there are concerns in place for people's health that haven't been there in previous years. And yet we're not really seeing more people get released. We're not really seeing more clemencies, more compassionate releases, more paroles to the extent that people in California can get parole that's not available to everyone in the system. And I think that people should be asking, okay, you know, why is a global public health crisis not making any difference to people that are running our prisons?
Prison Policy Initiative this past year did a study that actually found the releases for inmates during the pandemic were lower in many areas than in previous years, than in 2019, for instance, when there was no pandemic.
What we did was we looked at states that publish regular release data, right? States that actually publish data saying, here's the number of people we released in January, February, March, et cetera, year over year. And we're able to see, because of that, how many releases there were, you know, in years leading up to the pandemic and then during the pandemic. Now, to be sure, there are some logistical challenges that the pandemic will pose to the release process, right? You can't have in-person parole hearings in the same way that you could before the pandemic. There are certain halfway houses and reentry facilities that probably have stopped taking people because of COVID. There are definitely some programs. You know, sometimes if you're in prison, you won't qualify for parole release unless you've done a certain program, like an anger management program or a substance use program. And with some of those programs suspended, there's going to be fewer people who actually qualify to be paroled. So no doubt there are these challenges that the pandemic poses. But on balance, I still think that those things don't explain the fact that releases actually went down during this catastrophic health event. Throughout the pandemic, we've had case rates in prisons and jails be 4 times higher than in the general public. We've had death rates be about 2 times higher. We know that people in prison and jail are way likelier than the rest of us to have chronic health conditions like HIV, heart problems, and diabetes that make you more vulnerable to COVID-19 should you contract it. And yet, when we look at this release data, we see that releases are down during the pandemic, right? And what I think is happening, frankly, is that parole boards and governors are looking at these people who are incarcerated, and they're thinking two things. The first thing they're thinking is, well, we don't really have the services to help these people succeed outside of prison. We're not, you know, we don't have any interest in expanding healthcare, expanding, you know, free housing, giving people free, you know, credits to use on public transit. We're not going to help them. So we don't want to release them and cause trouble by just releasing them onto the streets. I think that California, in this respect, based on what I've seen anecdotally, is doing better than other prison systems at containing COVID-19. Obviously, that's a relief, should be a relief to anyone that has a loved one incarcerated. I think that, you know, we still really need to be asking, you know, for instance, I noticed in the news today, 90-year-old man that was serving a sentence for possession of marijuana was just released. Just released, right? He spent the entire pandemic behind bars, and now finally he's been released. Why are these people still in prison? A couple months ago, I saw a report that CDCR had denied release to a 94-year-old man, right? So these things are just happening, right? People are still stuck in prisons who should not be there during a pandemic. If these folks catch COVID, they will die. This is a kind of time when we need to be reassessing what our prison's doing to get people out.
Another report from the Prison Policy Institute says less than half the population, not California, but nationwide incarcerated individuals are vaccinated. And less than half of the correctional officers are also vaccinated. And yet the states are not requiring guards to use protective equipment.
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons that we see COVID-19 spreading so fast behind bars, right? It's because we have people that go in and out of these facilities every day that have not been vaccinated. They're bringing COVID-19 in, they're bringing COVID-19 out. Again, conditions are very, very bad in prisons right now for incarcerated people. Corrections jobs are also dangerous in an unprecedented way for people that work there. And we've seen, you know, high numbers of corrections staff quitting over the last year and, you know, refusing to go to work, saying, I don't want to be working in this environment anymore, right? And that's led to the staffing shortages that we see across the country. And the staffing shortages in prisons have led to all sorts of other problems, right? Like, you know, entire wings of prisons having one corrections officer, you know, being on site, you know, over a particular night. You know, I think that all of this, you know, together sort of makes the case that prisons are not safe places to have people during a pandemic. We simply should not be warehousing people in such close conditions. And if there is any way to reduce the density of these facilities, we can and we should. Again, that's not something that our lawmakers are expressing any interest in doing.
Now, I'm looking at COVID-19, the dashboard for California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And, you know, the numbers don't look that bad. Actually, they look great compared to a year ago when there was a massive San Quentin outbreak that reached thousands of people daily were getting infected. I think it was, what, up to 2/3 of the population was infected. At this point right now, the active cases, infections are at 181 currently. What are you seeing? And you mentioned earlier, 80% of the population has been vaccinated in California's prisons. What is your response to that assessment? And then, you know, can you talk about what other prisons and other states, what that looks like, how they're faring?
Well, I think the main one that I've been thinking about recently is in New York City. Across the country, you know, over the last couple of months, we've been seeing prison populations tick back up and up and up as officials in these systems decide, okay, COVID-19 is over and we can, you know, reopen for business of incarceration again. Of course, that is leading to serious outbreaks in places that are not prepared to handle the spread of the virus. So New York City is a big one. You have 25, I think over a 25% infection rate on Rikers Island at the moment. And that's because these are seriously inhumane facilities where they're not really taking precautions to, you know, do things like quarantine people upon intake. And furthermore, there's really no coordination between various people in the criminal justice system, you know, like courts, police, prosecutors, judges, to, you know, make sure that the only people who are being incarcerated are people who really, really need to be kept away from the public for purposes of public safety. You know, I was just reading about people who are being incarcerated in New York for violating a technical condition of their parole. One guy was arrested in the hospital. These are folks that pose no risk to public safety. They're just being arrested because the criminal justice system is operating as usual. We decided that we have no better way of dealing with, social problems than assigning folks to, you know, supervision systems that will incarcerate them at the first opportunity. And that's how you end up with crowded jails and prisons and serious outbreaks of COVID-19. You know, I'm very grateful to learn that that's probably not happening in California prisons based on the numbers that you just gave me, but it is happening in many places across the country.
So on average, what's the data on how many people are actually incarcerated for drug offenses and nonviolent drug offenses?
Well, on a typical year, it's about 1 in 5 arrested and incarcerated for a drug offense. That's 20% of the overall prison population is there on a drug offense. We can't disaggregate it for different drugs, so we don't know how many are there for marijuana or other things. You know, but we know that it's a very sizable proportion. We also know that there are a lot of states where a significant number of prison admissions every year, in some states it's above 30 or 40%, are for technical violations of probation and parole. And a technical violation, for people who don't know, is a violation that is not actually a crime. When you're on probation, when you're on parole, there's a lot of different conditions that you have to meet. You have to appear to be looking for work. You have to appear to be trying to find housing. You can't be doing drugs. You can't be associating with anybody who has a criminal record in some places that are really over-policed. That might include 90% of people that you know. You can't be, you know, living in some place that doesn't technically allow folks with criminal records to live. That includes a lot of public housing. The list really just goes on and on. And if your parole officer finds you to be in violation of those conditions, they can send you back to jail for something that's not a crime. So, you know, again, what I'm saying is that there are a lot of states in which, you know, those technical violations constitute a significant portion of all admissions to prisons. And so I'd be curious to know, sadly, we don't have this data, but I would be curious to know how often that's happening during the pandemic. Obviously, in states like New York, it's happening a fair amount.
Yeah, so it really talks to the revolving door of people who get caught up in the criminal justice system, thus the word caught up.
That's right. You know, I think folks who are, you know, people who have not been to jail or prison before often don't understand how this can work, right? That you can go to prison or jail for something relatively minor, and you can easily get caught up in it so that you end up back there again and again. And then that can happen because, you know, for instance, you come back out and all of a sudden you have a criminal record. You can't access the welfare benefits that you used to be able to access. You know, meanwhile, you have all this criminal justice debt because you've got fines and fees that you have to pay. And the city's coming after you if you don't pay it. Maybe they ding you again and they ask you to show up to court because you haven't paid your fines and fees. You don't want to show up to court. You miss your court date. Now you've got a failure to appear. Right now, you've got a bench warrant out for your arrest. You can get back into the system for basically nothing. And this happens all the time. I think that one of the things that's been extremely sad about the pandemic is seeing people go back to jail and go to prison because of, more than anything, the inertia of the criminal justice system at work.
And it's focus also on punishment rather than helping people build more resilience and stronger skills so they do not return to prison.
Yeah, and I'd like to be extremely clear. I think that if we had a healthy and functioning society that, you know, gave people access to free healthcare and affordable housing, that treated housing and healthcare and things like that as human rights, we simply would not be sending so many people to jail and prison in the first place. You could, you know, not that I would advocate this, but you could leave the criminal justice system as is and drastically expand social services, and the number of people who ended up incarcerated would go way down. We know that because there are so many people who are arrested just for basically the crime of being homeless. You know, people being arrested for using drugs, for having mental health crises, as opposed to, you know, if we lived in a society where those things were recognized as illnesses for which you could actually get treatment, for which you could seek out treatment, we wouldn't have this problem. So it's not just that we have a prison and jail system that's not focused on rehabilitation and care. It's also that we have a broader society that's not making the resources available so that people can actually live their best lives.
And then throw in race, where people of color are disproportionately locked up in prisons.
Well, I think that obviously race plays a big part, and there's many, many documented studies of, you know, racism and racial bias at all stages of the criminal justice process. But I also want to stress that prisons and jails overwhelmingly across race are warehousing people who are poor. We did a study a few years ago looking at the average incomes of people in prison, as well as the average incomes of people who are in jail because they can't afford to post bail. And the cross-section, we also disaggregated our data by race, and you can see across races, Black, white, Latino, everybody who is in jail has average incomes of about $10,000 or less per year. These people are very low income. It's people who have fallen through massive holes in the social safety net, and they've fallen right into the criminal justice system.
Now, you mentioned earlier that some prisons, they're financially charging people incarcerated in prison for their own medical bills. Can you talk more about this? You know, what states is this happening? And are people who have gotten COVID-19 who are incarcerated being charged with the medical bills?
Right. This is something, you know, for listeners in California, I can say that this is not something that happens in California. There was a bill a couple years ago that eliminated medical copays in prisons and jails. So that was great to see. But there are many other states that still do charge incarcerated people to pay to see the doctor. And, you know, right next door, you've got Nevada, which is a state where, you know, I recall it being reported on a few years ago, and the Department of Corrections there saying, yeah, you know, it's typical for most people to have to pay a copay. So, you know, why shouldn't incarcerated people pay a copay? And I thought, well, because they have a constitutional right to healthcare. Nevertheless, Nevada is the only state that, to our knowledge, has made zero changes to its copay policy during the COVID-19 pandemic. There are a number of states that have partially eliminated copays during the pandemic, like they've suspended copays if you have symptoms that might be COVID-19 symptoms, but they haven't suspended it for everything. What's interesting, of course, about, you know, those partial suspensions of copays is that it reveals that people in the criminal justice system, policymakers, they understand if you make somebody pay a copay to see the doctor, that's going to discourage doctor visits, right? Somebody that's having symptoms is going to be less likely to go and be open about those symptoms if they're going to have to pay, you know, even what feels to us like a small copay, right? Like $3 to $5 to see the doctor. You got to keep in mind that most incarcerated people have no money and earn nothing from their jobs. So a $5 copay is a pretty big copay.
That's what they make a month.
That's right. That's right. So I think, you know, it's telling that there are so many states that we found that have suspended copays for COVID-19 symptoms, but they haven't suspended copays for everything else. So these are, you know, what's going on is these are cash-strapped systems, or these are, I don't want to say cash-strapped, actually. I just want to say they're under-resourced systems, right? Medical units that simply can't handle the sheer amount of sickness and chronic illness that they have to deal with every day, that their patients are, you know, experiencing every single day. And so to triage and reduce the number of sick calls that they get, they are basically saying, you know, if you can't afford to see the doctor, if you can't pay the copay, sorry, you have to go to the back of the line, right? You're not really being seen. So, you know, again, these policies have continued during COVID. There's no doubt in my mind that they've made the overall health situation in prisons much worse. It's a terrible thing to see.
I'm looking at this report from the Prison Policy Initiative about medical copays in U.S. prisons, and I don't know, more than half of U.S. prisons, more than half of states charge prisoners to see the doctor.
That's right. And
it looks like almost 2/3.
Most states do. And we don't, it's an incredibly cruel policy, which again, you can be sure is causing people to not go to the doctor even when they feel sick. You know, I think that everybody, frankly, who thinks that the lack of available and free healthcare in this country is outrageous should also be outraged that we've extended our, punitive and expensive system, co-pays, into the prison system.
Yeah, it looks like 12 states in the U.S. do not have co-pays, and then another, 10 or 8 have suspended co-pays.
Right. I'd like to highlight something else that sort of relates to this, which is the fact that, even as COVID-19 cases have overwhelmed medical units in prisons and hospitals on the outside too, it has meant that people who have chronic conditions are not able to see doctors for those conditions. And I've heard this from, family member after family member of incarcerated people who write to us. They say, my son or my daughter is diabetic, has cancer, has a heart problem, and normally they can get some medication or can see a doctor for it, but now all of the doctors are tied up dealing with COVID-19. I'm not trying to, denigrate the doctors, who I am sure are using their medical expertise to make judgment calls about which cases are most urgent. But I do think that this is, this is another reason to ask, and I'm sorry to sound like a broken record here, why are we still incarcerating so many people with these chronic health issues who are seriously vulnerable to contracting COVID, many of whom have been in prison for decades, many of whom are not there for the most serious of crimes? Why are we still incarcerating those people? Do we have a system that has any compassion for folks inside, or do we have a system that exists to be cruel to folks who have been convicted of crimes? I'm more and more convinced that it's the latter.
Wanda Beltram is a spokesperson for the Prison Policy Initiative.